Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today on the Steve Jones Show, we're going to be talking about the sport of kings. Dick Girardi will be joining us here this afternoon talking about the Preakness. Steve already said that he kind of likes the two horses he did earlier, including Union Rags. Not so sure yet. I do like Bodemeister, though. The way he ran in the Kentucky Derby just makes me feel as though he might be a good pick. I kind of agree with you on that one, Steve.
Yeah, I think we're going to have three different winners this year.
Boy, that would make NBC very upset.
I think we're going to have, I'll have another, Bodemeister tomorrow and Union Rags in the Belmont. We will talk with Dr. Girardi, who really understands the concept of horseflesh. We will do that with Dr. Girardi in the 4 o'clock hour.
What is his doctorate in, by the way?
His doctorate in?
Yeah.
Hoops and horses.
Ah, I see. Bovine, or not bovine, but equestrian.
Yes, equestrian, if it's, really, because unless you're watching a different race than I am, there are no bovines out there.
Well, that's usually a little slower race, as a matter of fact.
And we will bring in Patrick Chambers, the head basketball coach of the Nittany Lions, after the news at the bottom of the hour. So, next half hour, we will have Patrick Chambers, Dick Girardi, just after the news at 4:06, and open line time. We apologize once again for this week's shabby guest list.
You're just not getting it done.
Shabby. We apologize. Dan O'Neill and Ron Cook and DJ and Patrick. I mean, it's another shameful week.
I actually learned something with Dan O'Neill, so it's kind of nice.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. The ball is inflated and not stuffed. Well done.
Hey, did you hear Roy?
I'm so happy for you.
Good. Did you hear Roy Oswalt is ready to come back as early as June? He's been working out at home, and things were fairly close, I guess, with Los Angeles potentially signing him earlier in the year. So that is one of the teams up for
bid. Well, you know what? With Vance Worley, if I were the Phillies, I'd think about it.
And that was going to be my next question. Boston also expressed some interest in it, and I think the Phillies should look into that.
Well, Boston needs to look into it. I mean, they have some issues. I mean, when Beckett missed that turn, I was, of course, at Fenway Park that day and saw Aaron Cook pitch. I wanted to tell you in no uncertain terms, after sitting about 85 feet away, not the solution. Ooh, brutal.
Is that the game where you said you decided to go for a sausage?
Yeah, I did.
And you felt like you didn't miss anything.
Absolutely. I said to the other guy, I said, my day is ruined.
What about all these young guys all of a sudden that have these arm troubles? Well, you know what? Not so young.
I want to talk about that for a second. Well, they are, in terms of being stretched out, they are.
Well, okay? What I was thinking about was another guy that had a great start to his career that may be retiring now, and I still consider him young because he's young to you and I, but Kerry Wood talking about retiring, and what a huge start he had in his career, and then it was all gone. Maybe the same thing happening here to Strasburg and some other young guns.
Well, Strasburg so far has held up okay this year, right?
Well, we'll see. I mean, so far.
Yeah, he's held up fine so far. I'm not going to sit there and, I'm not going to worry about him right now. I mean, he's already had it once, but he's okay. Well, let's talk about the young arms. Had a long talk last night with Frank Coonley, the president of the Pittsburgh Pirates. I feel like sometimes I get embarrassed by this. I feel like I'm name dropping on the show. It's just the circle of people you're running, that's all.
I'd name drop some of the people I run with, but it wouldn't make any difference to anybody. So,
would they be proud?
The people that I'm running around with? No, they wouldn't want me to drop their names that I'm hanging out with them. So.
Yeah, that's not good. But then again, I would hope that on this show, that one of the values of having me on the show is that, yes, I do run occasionally with the LeVar Arringtons, the Shane Conlins, the Frank Coonleys of the Pirates, the Chris Wheelers, the Bill O'Briens, the Patrick Chambers. I think that's the value you have to have on a show like this, is that you have to have that ability where you feel like for the NBA playoffs coming up, if you want to talk with Mike Breen, I can get a hold of him.
Steve, and I hate to tell you, but that's what makes you interesting.
Yeah, yeah, well, I don't know.
I just want you to know.
But I think that but I think it also helps in terms of who we get on the show.
Oh, it absolutely does.
Well, I think that part of it comes to play. And I was talking to Frank Coonley, the president of the Pirates, last night about about the philosophy in the organization, about arms. And it's ironic you brought it up today because we talked about that last night. The Pirates in their organization, the Phillies a little bit different. I want to tell you that because I watched this at Williamsport. Early in the season, you will see Williamsport pitchers stretched out 6 innings. They'll be out 6 innings, maybe squeeze a 7th in sometimes. That's the Phillies organizational. Pirates have drafted younger pitchers a year removed from high school, Jameson Taillon, year removed from high school when he was pitching at West Virginia last year. Now, Gerrit Cole's a little bit different. Gerrit Cole went to UCLA and had pitched 3 years and is older. But Zach Von Rosenberg, they put a lot of money into him. Colton Kane, they put a lot of money into him. Young pitchers in that 19, 20-year-old range. The Pirates put them on specific pitch counts. I mean, sometimes I've seen pitch counts as low as 40 to 45 in the first couple of weeks of the season. 40 to 45. And early in the New York Penn League season, the Pirates do a lot of piggyback appearances. Two starters, one essentially gets to a pitch count of, 40 to 50, maybe 60, but lasts like 3 to 4 innings, and then they bring in somebody else who would also be a starter, but the same story with them on the pitch count. Now, as the season goes along and they stretch out, they expand the pitch count, and so far, there has not been one spikes pitcher. And the Pirates took over in 2007, and there were no issues, by the way, in 2006 with the Cardinals. Not one spikes pitcher has been set down with arm trouble yet. And I think they've tried to essentially slowly but surely stretch them out and get their endurance going each year to avoid what we're seeing with what happened with Steven Strasburg and some of the other younger pitchers. Now, they're force-fed into the majors quicker. So the guys that you're talking about are in the majors, where they feel maybe they have to throw a little bit harder and they may have to have a little more snap on their breaking ball. And that puts more strain, by the way, on the arm. So that's the philosophy. And again, every organization has their own philosophies. I'm telling you right now, at Williamsport, early in the year, it is never a surprise to me to see a Williamsport cross-cutter pitcher in the Phillies organization go 6 innings. It is a shock when a Pirates spikes pitcher in the first couple of weeks of the season goes 6 innings. Now, Tony Watson, who's in the majors with the Pirates, in fact, he's 3-0 in the season so far. I remember when he pitched with the Spikes and they played at Williamsport, he went 5 1/3 no-hit innings and they took him out. He reached his pitch count. I think his pitch count that night was 75. So as he got to it, didn't matter. They took him out.
That's almost like a Little League pitch count.
But again, they are trying to avoid what you're talking about, long-term arm problems. That's what they're trying to avoid. They're trying to avoid have. They have invested a lot of money. The Pirates have spent a lot of money on young pitchers. I'm talking big bonus money, seven-figure bonus money. And they are trying to make sure that they continue to develop their investment right to the major league level. So that's, you know, that's each organization has completely different viewpoints on how to handle it.
Which is worse on an arm or on a pitcher, throwing a fastball at, or at least attempting to throw a fastball at 100, 101 miles an hour, or throwing a breaking ball?
At this stage of their career, neither. Neither. For a young pitcher, you're talking about, you just mentioned Little League?
Well, in general, in general.
I'm telling you right
now. Stages, yeah.
Yeah, I am not for Little Leaguers throwing curveballs.
No, no. A glorified slider is the and is about as far as I would take it. But in Little League, and I've told Little League pitchers this for many, many years coaching them, you have two pitches. You have a fastball and a changeup. That's all you need.
Right.
That's all you need. If you have a
now,
good
when you
one,
get to,
that's all
when
you need.
When you get to be 13 and you get to the bigger field, you know, you're another year developed, especially when you're 14, you can really then start working on a curveball. But 11 and 12 year olds, no. I see the Little League World Series, and 11 and 12 year olds are throwing curveball. I'm thinking to myself, what are you doing?
I mean, and they're nasty curveballs. I mean, they're great. I mean, they're great pitches. But yeah. At 12 years old, that is a lot of wear and tear on the arm.
Now that may have changed because the Little League has gone to pitch counts. And because they've gone to pitch counts, maybe that changes the equation.
It's helped a little bit, but there's still a lot of coaches that stress the breaking ball way too much in Little League and use it entirely too much. I mean, if you're using it maybe five times a game in pitch counts that are under 70 or in the 60s, that's okay to me. But I've seen way too many curveballs in a game from a 12-year-old or younger pitcher, even at 60 pitches.
So you're seeing, I mean, some of these guys are rushed. Now, take Strasburg. Strasburg, to be honest with you, he was at San Diego State. He pitched. And sometimes you get a guy that gets worn out. I'll give you an example. A guy that made the majors eventually, and it was in the majors for a little bit, P.J. Walters with the Cardinals. When he came to the spikes, he had already thrown 171 innings at South Alabama. Are you kidding me? And also, when he came to State College, his arm was dead. So they had him relying on junk the entire time when he was here. They did everything they could. They had him rely on junk. Then eventually in the offseason, he gets stronger, and then he gets fastball back because he had a fastball that was in the, I think, supposed to be 92 to 94 miles per hour. And all of a sudden, you know, you're watching him warm up, and you realize his fastball's getting there at 87, 88. You're like, what the hell? Heck, I thought this guy had a great fastball. And I talked to the pitching coach, talked to the manager. Both said the same thing. I said, look, he's throwing 171 innings. And that's the part they can't control. They can't control a college coach looking at a guy saying, need you out there again, need you out there again, need you out there again. Now, to P.J. Walters' credit, he pitched in such a way with junk where he actually was relatively effective. And then he gets fastball back the next year after he left State College and eventually made the major leagues. So,
but how do guys on the other side of the scale that are pushing 40 and 50 be able to continually throw junk because the fastball's not there and be able to do it without any major injuries? And I think you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, Jamie Moyer.
Jamie Moyer, right.
Yeah, but he's done that forever. His arm and his elbow are used to that kind of motion. There's no strain. There's not quite the same strain on him as somebody else. Again, the ability to be stretched out. Once you're stretched out, you should be okay. Should be okay. Now, certain things happen, just wear and tear, the fraying of a rotator cuff, right? Something happens with the elbow, Tommy John surgery. Most pitchers come back from Tommy John surgery stronger than before because they've had to work out so hard and use their muscles. If they really want to get themselves back, they actually work all those muscles so hard, harder than they worked before. And because they worked them harder than before, everything around it builds up and they actually come back stronger. That's if they do it right. 1-800-795-9565, 1-800-795-9565. Patrick Chambers coming up in a few minutes after the bottom of the hour. Dick Girardi after 4 o'clock. It's the Kevin Hur Love Fest. Today we're coming to you from the beautiful Sunbury Motors Studio at the Chateau. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Routes 11 and 15, Sunbury Motors Kia in Hummel's Wharf. Back with more on WKOK after this.
Sunbury Motor Company, a tradition of trust since 1915. We have the largest selection of new and used Fords, Lincolns, Hyundais, and Kias anywhere. You want a new Ford? You got it. A 2012 Ford Fiesta four-door sedan, just $232 per month. And it gets 38 miles per gallon. And if you really want to save mileage money, come get a new 2012 Hyundai Veloster, three-door coupe with 40 miles per gallon on the highway for just $292 a month. Swing on over to Sunbury Motors Kia and try on a new 2012 Kia Forte four-door sedan for just $18,230. And when it comes to used cars, well, just head over to sunburymotors.com and search our huge selection of pre-owned vehicles where you can use our black book and take the guesswork out of trading in your old car. We give you easy access to the most up-to-date internet car buying tools. There's a reason we're number one. So come check us out today at Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, located at 943 North 4th Street in the Auto Plaza, or Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, or go to sunburymotors.com.
Big 12 Southeastern Conference holding a press conference later today. They're going to announce a deal that will pit the football regular season champions against each other in a New Year's Day bowl game for 5 years beginning after next season, January 1, 2014.
And they're looking for a sponsor right now.
I'm sure they are.
And you can name it if you have the right amount of money.
Right. You know, the question is where this game's going to be. The move will establish the equivalent of the Rose Bowl, Pac-12, Big Ten. Now, those two conferences have pushed for a new format, preserving that matchup, and Mike Slive has indicated he does not favor that. So he went out and did his own. So you're going to have, beginning on January 1, 2014, a Rose Bowl with the Big Ten champion against the Pac-12 champion, and soon to be named bowl game on January 1, 2014 between the Southeastern Conference champion and the Big 12 champion. Of course, that is in case, of course, they don't make the semifinals.
And if they do?
Well, if they do, then they're going to have other teams from the conference involved.
Ooh, there's excitement.
Well, I'm just telling you what they want to do.
I know.
They discussed the concept for 3 years. And they think it gives for the Big 12, it's the shot in the arm they need. I mean, the instability of the Big 12 has certainly been on display with Nebraska going to the Big 10, Colorado to the Pac-12, Missouri, Texas A&M to the Southeastern Conference, and the addition of West Virginia and TCU to get them back to 10. And the two of them really have been the kings of the BCS, the two conferences. And this is what they want to go for. So, they're calling it a landmark agreement. BCS Executive Director Bill Hancock has already told the 11 conference commissioners and Notre Dame's athletic department that they want them to present a small number of options, 2 to 7 configurations, for a 4-team playoff to consider this summer when they sit down. And it'll be interesting to see what they do with it.
Now, I have a question. Yeah. Let's say the current BCS format stays, just for argument, mm-hmm. and one team goes to this BCS game, another team goes to this. Do you still have the Cotton Bowl matchup of number 2 and number 4? Number two in the Big 12, number four in the SEC.
Changes the pecking order.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Now the Cotton Bowl has become less of a bowl game.
Yeah, it sure has, but it's going to depend on what they do. They're going to take that championship game, by the way, and put it out for bid. The national championship game.
Right.
So, in other words, it's not going to end up in the Sugar Bowl, Orange Bowl, Rose Bowl, whatever. It could. I mean, they could have it at Ford Field in Detroit. How do you like that?
Yeah, see, I would think they would want to make this game. I mean, I know we poke fun at the Cotton Bowl, but the Cotton Bowl has some heritage there. I would think they would want to make this game the Cotton Bowl game.
Especially where they're playing it now. I mean, the old Cotton Bowl is 92,000 seats. And I mean, I just did a game in that stadium 4.5 months ago. Whoa.
Were there sections that were roped off with caution tape?
No. Well, no, all the upper deck's all brand new. I mean, the upper deck there is all brand new. But it's certainly, it's old and it's,
It's been around. Old. It's heritage. It's a heritage stadium.
It's seen better days.
Classic stadium. That's it. That's the politically correct term. It's a classic stadium.
Historic. Patrick Chambers, after the news at the bottom of the hour, here on WKOK. Great Friday to each and every one of you. Don't forget, support the Sunbury Fire Company and their Mustang raffle.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome everybody. Great to have you with us on this gorgeous Friday. And big event coming up 2 weeks from today. That's Coaches versus Cancer. The annual golf tournament will take place at the Penn State Golf Courses. And now we welcome in the head basketball coach of the Nittany Lions, Patrick Chambers. My friend.
Steve, how are you, buddy?
All right. First of all, I have in front of me.
First of all, did I hear an Egg McMahon reference?
I did.
Yes.
Yes. You are correct, sir.
Oh, that's Marv. That's Marv.
That's a part Marv, part Ed.
Yeah, they were great together, weren't they?
They were. They were great. I have the Penn State injury list in front of me here. Let's see. Tim Frazier, fine. DJ Newbill, fine. Patrick Chambers, wounded. All right.
Yeah,
So you had knee surgery.
I might be out for the season this year. I'm not sure.
My friend, after watching you coach this past season, I don't think anybody can afford to have you out for the season. I strongly suggest that you get back soon. I watched you coach all last year with the brace on. You gutted it out. You finally had to have it done. How are you doing with it?
I tell you what, it's Dr. Sebastianelli took care of me, and my man Saz has been great. It's more mental than physical sometimes. But it was definitely a serious injury and a serious surgery, one where I had to get my tibia. It's basically the refracturing the leg to straighten it out and put the weight on the outside. So today was a good day. Let me just put it that way to you, Steve. I actually was able to raise my left leg today, and Saz and I were high-fiving. So we're making progress, and sometimes it's funny how things work out. I'm not happy this happened, but I'm glad I've been put back in this situation. Because sometimes you forget what it is to be hurt, and you forget what it is to have injury and adversity and challenges, and then you finally realize, wow, this is, you know, I thought I was going to be out tomorrow going to a friend's birthday party and a christening on Sunday. That's not happening. That's not happening. And sometimes the process is so slow, you forget about that, and you forget about the patience and how to persevere. So it's been a challenging week, but things are going well, buddy. Things are going well.
I want to give just a piece of advice, and I think this will help you. I think what will push you forward, I want you to remember this word, and I think it's a very important word, attitude.
I have 3 bands on my right wrist right now that I've been tapping. They're worn out. The paint is the word attitude is coming off. And I'm telling you, that's what it's all about. And I'm glad that's my foundation, not just for our program, for me as a human being and a parent and a coach. You need it. I mean, every day is different. The challenges are different. You know, I have three kids, and you can't help your wife out with the kids. And thank God you got great friends in this area and family in this area to help you out. But definitely a challenge, buddy. Yeah. But I'm feeling good today. You definitely got me on a good day.
Good. I like that. And one of these days I will earn my attitude, man. I still have to earn it. I know that.
You still don't have one?
No.
It could have been because of the last time I saw you, you ripped your tie off because I was underdressed at a function.
I did that because I am a team player, all right? That was to make my head coach far more comfortable in that setting. Right? Now, that is attitude.
That is attitude, buddy. And I did enjoy doing that day with you, so I appreciate it.
Let's get to Coaches versus Cancer, which is coming up. And before I get to that, ironically, the tournament is on June 1st. And for you, June 1st ends up being a very special anniversary day.
Absolutely. First, I would tell you it's my 5th year anniversary with my wife. So I didn't know if you were talking about that anniversary. I want to say that publicly. That's my 5-year anniversary.
Well, but I want to tell you right now, that's the best coaching decision you ever made.
Anybody who knows my wife and knows me, they know, no question about it.
Yeah.
The best recruit. That was my best recruit by far.
No doubt. But that was the day you're driving along Commonwealth Avenue, know the street well, and you got a phone call.
I got a phone call right around 11:45, the day of this great event, Coaches versus Cancer, 1 year ago. Got a call, and I was offered the job, and I can't tell you the joy, and I was overwhelmed, and I was ecstatic, and I was coming home. I was coming to a place that I've, watched since I was a little kid. And now it's going to be a big part of it in reestablishing the basketball program. So I'll never forget that conversation. I'll never forget where I was, and I'll never forget just the joy and happiness that's brought my wife and I. So many great things have happened over the past year, and that day will forever be a great memory. Not only did I get married on that day, but I was also offered this incredible job.
Yeah, and incredible for all of us, too, to get you here. Believe me, incredible for all of us. I've never felt better about the program than I do now. Now let's get to Coaches versus Cancer, the tournament itself, because you have this habit of once you get involved in something, you really immerse yourself in it. You have a great golf committee, obviously, around you that has done this before. How excited are you about this event and what it can mean to help so many others?
I'll tell you what, obviously it's my first time going through it, and everybody that works on this committee, obviously, this isn't their full-time job. You know, they're volunteering their time and all their efforts, and for what they've done since its inception, man, I think it's close to $2 million. I think it's like $1.7, $1.8 million that they've raised over that time. It's pretty special, group of people to be able to put together these events all year long to help those in need, to help families in need. And I'm just excited to be a part of it. And I want to be involved. We just met with Louis Sheets last week. We made some rounds, and I think that's what we need to do. And I think I need to be a big part of that and, carve out some time to make sure that we're helping out our local community, and especially those who are suffering.
Louis Sheets and the Sheets family, very, very special in this area, and you have to be impressed by, quote, their attitude as to what they bring to the table.
No question. I mean, it was the first time I met one of the Sheets, and happened to be Louis, and we went to his headquarters and to talk to him and the people that are involved with him and his associates, and it's a top-notch organization, and it was just great to be a part of that day, and then what his vision is and what he's trying to do and how he's trying to help people and how selfless you can be in times like this. And not only they're giving their finances and vouchers and sponsoring the day with food and beverages and whatever, gift cards, it's more than that. They're also sending volunteers and their time. So it's just an incredible outcry of help, and unselfishness. I keep going back to selfless and unselfishness because that's what it is. You don't have the finances, spend the time. Because we went down to Hershey, and, man, that was an emotional evening for myself and our players a couple weeks ago to be in pediatrics and walk through those halls and go through those rooms. And, you know, you leave and you thank the Lord that you're healthy and your kids are healthy and, you know, you're stable. And you really realize you don't have you don't have that many problems when you in the grand scheme of things. So I think that's what you're learning from all this.
No question about it. Also the fact that the Bob Perks Fund, which does so much to help out individuals, families, it almost is as if a direct donation is made to get a lift chair for somebody, to help out with a bill here or there. To have that component in this, give us an idea of the importance of that component, because people always love to know where their money is going and that they feel like they're making a direct donation.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, all your finances are coming to this area. Companies that are donating money are in this area. So don't you think that's where the money should go? It should go to this area, this community, this region, to help those. And if those, you know, companies are going to be so generous with their finances, I mean, the Bob Perks Fund is obviously an incredible fund. It's a big part of what we do, and it's great to see exactly what you said, where our money is going, and it's great to see that's going to families here locally.
I know that something that you feel very strongly about, that whether it's the basketball program or anything, you like to do everything in a first-class manner, except when it comes to your announce team. And
I was going to say, do I need to come on when Dick's on? We need to have a chat. Because, yeah. I've been home for a week, and I'm just watching past film, and I actually got some radio clips. So I wanted to talk to you guys about a few. If you had a minute, just a couple things I wanted to mention.
yeah, that's okay, because I jotted down a couple of plays.
You know what, you're right. There's a couple of Bayfield Bees I could really work on.
But this golf committee, the way they have the tournament structured, you want things done in a first-class way. It must be great for you to inherit something that already is first-class.
You're right. I mean, there's not. It's running itself at this point. You know, you got the right people in place, you got the right structure in place, and you know we're all about structure here at Penn State and in our program. I mean, and that's what you have, and you have that with this, with what everybody's put together over time. And from what I hear, you know, it's first class. This is going to be my first time. I'm a rookie. This is going to be my first time going through, and I'm really excited about it. But I mean, all the sponsors and everything that all the volunteers and everything that they're going to do, everything that this day is about, is truly what Penn State's about. You know, the passion, the energy, the compassion, the care for others. And I think it's extremely important, especially in this day.
Last year, and it was very shortly after you got the job, and you had finally had the entire staff assembled because Brian Daly was, you had just hired him. And I had asked you a question about the importance of sitting down at that conference table, looking around the room and knowing each person, knowing your philosophy and the loyalty in the room. Now that you've gone through a year and seen them coaches as staff together, recruit as a staff together, and recruit forward because the next cycle's coming up in July. What can you tell us about the meaning of your staff?
It's critical. I know I've been using that word a lot. It is. I mean, loyalty and trust has been thrown out the window, and I don't know where it's gone. But in this program, it's very much alive. And very much, you know, maybe I am new school, but I have a lot of old school traits. And I don't forget where I came from. And be able to trust someone and to be loyal to somebody is the ultimate. And that's what we have in the staff that I brought to Penn State. These guys, trustworthy, they're loyal, they'll do whatever Penn State needs them to do. They'll do whatever I ask them to do, whether it's basketball-driven or family-driven or charity-driven or community-driven, whatever it may be to help these players, to help this university be successful. I mean, I think we've done a good job for this first go-around with Brandon Taylor, Okosa, Donovan Jack, now that everybody's signed, sealed, and delivered, we can talk about them. I mean, I'm really proud of the work that they've done. And, you know, we can't forget DJ Newbill either. I mean, we've been talking about him a lot, and now we're going to actually be able to see him play. I mean, you saw him play. a ton in practice, but now it's going to be nice to see him with the uniform on.
Well, what I want to do is I know it's a good day for you, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you go. That way you can still feel like you're having a good day. Because that's my area of loyalty.
No, you're the best, buddy. You're the best. And I'll, if I can just give one last, you know, June 1st, Coaches versus Cancer. There's going to be a great event Thursday night over at the baseball stadium with hors d'oeuvres and the whole deal. Come on out. Come out to that. Sponsors are going to be there. It's going to be great. There's over 350 golf participants. So there's going to be a ton of people, a lot of fun, a lot of shaking hands, a lot of laughing. There's going to be beverages, soft and the other beverages. So come out, enjoy a great evening, a great day, for a great cause.
For a great cause. For a great cause.
Because not just hang out with Steve Jones, but it's also a great cause.
All right. Well, all right. If you feel that's a greater lure, it's up to you. All right.
Steve, thanks for having me on, buddy.
Hey, Coach, great to hear from you. Can't wait to see you next week.
You got it, pal.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Pat is the head basketball coach of the Nittany Lions. And good time with him. As always, recovering, feeling better. Maybe a little too graphic, I thought, on the surgery part. Goodness gracious. But that tournament, by the way, is 2 weeks from today, and it's May 31st. Will be that get-together at Midland Field at Bronco Park. Coaches versus Cancer Tournament, 2 weeks from today, June 1st. We will come back. Some open line time at 1-800-795-9565. Dick Girardi at 406 from Pimlico. As we continue with the mediocrity that is our guest list after this. It must be Friday, because it's time to love the Gaga. Play it out. Come on.
That's all I got. That's all you get.
I mean, it's all you have.
That's all you get. Maybe later.
For months now, those are the words I've heard repeated from you. That's all I got. That's all I got. Dick Girardi, Preakness, will join us from Pimlico, so we'll make the move from Thompson's Woods here in State College, where Patrick Chambers was today, to Pimlico in Baltimore with Dr. Girardi.
Thompson's Woods?
It's a neighborhood.
I was going to say, it sounds like where you played golf last week.
No. I tweeted, though.
Great.
What?
I've seen your tweets. Your tweets consist of three words at best.
Read it.
To slice this week? Oh, Kevin Herr to slice this weekend.
See?
That's not information that people want to know. That's information people already know.
That's what most of Twitter is.
That's what people already know.
Now, I have to admit, for example, when Adam Schefter tweets, that usually ends up being a story after that.
Yeah, people already know that. You have to tweet something that people don't know.
What?
Like, tweet that Marco Andretti has the top speed at Indianapolis for qualifying going into yesterday's
It doesn't
qualifying.
Matter if he has or not. They haven't qualified yet.
Well, it means that he's got the right setup.
You never know. What if he goes out tomorrow and all of a sudden, you know, suspension breaks?
Don't say that. You know the Andretti curse. Don't say that. You can't do that.
The Andretti curse. Mario won there.
Yeah, and then never really came close since. Actually, he came close. He came close once, thanks to Danny Sullivan.
Okay, now listen to me. Okay, I want to go through this one more time with you. One more time with you. Okay, I get sick and tired of hearing things such as Mario Andretti only won one Indianapolis 500.
He did.
Peyton Manning's only won one Super Bowl. Do you know how hard it is to win one?
I don't know. It seemed pretty hard or pretty easy for AJ Foyt or Rick Mears.
How many have you won?
How many have I competed in? There's a difference.
No, I'm just saying. But it's hard to win.
That's what makes
it difficult. It's hard to win.
I'm not blaming the man for not.
When you have great winners along the way, Because Mario Andretti has won. He won Le Mans.
Sure.
He won the Daytona 500.
Yep.
He won the Indianapolis 500.
Yep.
He won the Formula One World Championship.
Yep.
Guess what? One of the all-time greats, including an Indianapolis 500 win.
I'm not saying he's not. I'm okay. saying there's a curse after 1969.
There's no curse. Other people did things.
Michael led the most laps at Indianapolis of any driver that has never won the 500.
But it's 500 miles. Yeah, it's 500 miles. Things happen over 500 miles.
And you know what? This is why you were asking me the other day why I love this race and IndyCar more than NASCAR. This is exactly why. There's one 500-mile race, one, all year long. Mm-hmm. Everything else is less than 500. Never do you get a chance to test your car before, you know, for 500 miles before you have the big race. I like that idea. Now, you could probably say the same thing for the Daytona 500 because there's no race before it, but there are a lot of 500 or more mile races in NASCAR.
Yes,
but not an IndyCar. That's what I like the most.
It's because they have far more many. What does IndyCar have, like three races a year now?
It's not three races a year. It feels like it sometimes, but yeah, they're not running every single weekend. You're right.
Let me guess, less than 10.
No, I think it's a 15 race schedule right now.
15 races? Where?
Now, do I really have to go through? Well, all right, here we go. Detroit coming up on June 3rd.
Yeah,
Fort Worth. On the 9th.
That's the Speedway.
Yeah. Milwaukee on the 16th. That's another. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Iowa on the 23rd.
Japan?
Japan. If they have Japan, it'll be late in the year.
They've already raced Sao Paulo.
Yep. Sao Paulo. Alabama was already done. And Long Beach. Long Beach was the other one. Indy Toronto. Indy Edmonton. Mid-Ohio.
China. Edmonton is great.
I forgot about the race in China.
That's great. What are you going to do? Pass each other in the Great Wall?
And by the way, one of the best courses, and I say course because it's actually streets normally that they turn into a racetrack. I can't speak today. The Grand Prix of Baltimore. That is a really fun track. Yeah, St. Petersburg, Alabama, Long Beach, and Sao Paulo have already been in the books. Qualifying this weekend. Steve, set your DVR. You don't want to miss it.
There's a good chance I will. All right, Dick Girardi comes up after the top of the hour. Slower racing of the equine version.
Much slower.
Sarah Bartlett. Incredible. Next.